Welcome to Your Money Today, a unique look at financial, geopolitical, and other news relevant to you. For 45 years now, your host, Chris Temple, has provided his one-of-a-kind insights and advice on the markets and on our world. Whatever the subject, he calls them like he sees them. Roll up your sleeves with Chris as we get into today's program.
Welcome back, folks. I'm recording this right after the market close on Monday, January the 12th, and somewhat astonishingly, but maybe not a surprise as much, after all this time, we've seen the stock market rally after a week opening, and that was after the big news of the weekend, specifically last night, when Fed Chairman Jerome Powell came out and finally decided to counterattack President Trump on, in this case, a far more serious matter than just name-calling back and forth, and that is the news that we didn't really know the extent of until Powell came out with his two-minute video last night that you've all seen by now, at least if you're paying attention to me. And that news was that on Friday last week, various officials at the Fed, I don't know if it was addressed to Powell specifically or to who, but of course he's the guy that's in charge there. But they were subpoenaed to provide information specifically regarding some of Powell's own testimony to Congress the middle of last year, the case being, according to the Justice Department, that Powell lied to Congress when it came to the cost overruns, the extent of the budget, blah, 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 when it comes to the rehab of the Eccles Building and or whatever else in Washington. And some of you remember, of course, when Powell and Trump a few months back were walking through there, you know, with their hard hats on for the photo ops and so forth, and had a little bit of a half comical give and take back and forth where one said this, usually the president, and then Powell tried to correct them at least half respectfully. But now all this is out in the open, and there's a lot of people that are responding rather vociferously to this politically. But even overnight, when the markets opened after Powell's two-minute, again, video that they released last night on the Fed's X account and otherwise, it's on their website too, as I sent out, really wasn't a lot of angst. And of course, what little bit there was pretty much went away as the trading day went on. The bond market for a little while got above that 4.2% level on a 10-year treasury, but then there was a reasonably successful 10-year auction today, and then that took the steam off of it. We ended up closing south of that 4.2% number. That's going to continue to be one to watch. I remain quite convinced that sooner rather than later, we're going to see that breach to the upside, and that's going to cause other issues. But at least for the moment, the markets have dodged yet another bullet of something that came out of somewhat out of left field. But that's been the story again for quite a while. The impulse is still buy, buy, buy. In fact, among the guests this morning, who I as one of the more rational bulls, I guess you would say, on Wall Street, Ed Yardeni, I was listening to him, and you know, notwithstanding the fact that when he was on earlier this morning, the market was still, you know, a fair bit lower, not a great deal. Precious metals had surged higher, the dollar was off a little bit, yields were ticking up. He said still that he expects, you know, it's going to be a rocky first half of the year. He thinks the second half of the year will be better. He thinks the 7,700 level on the S&P 500 will be reached, besides the so-called rocky path he said we're going to have. And despite what's going on with the Fed, now I think had he had the benefit of some other news that came out later in the day, which I'm going to talk about a bit, he might have modified that a little. He did also express his concern, and I think this is part of his call for a rocky path this year, and not as easy a year for even the stock bulls as we saw in 2025. He, as I have done, was warning about the bond market vigilantes. He said that he doesn't see any reason for the Fed to lower interest rates any further, at least anytime soon. The economy is still doing well, inflation is still sticky, etc. And if certainly now that's even more likely, because the Fed is going to want to show that it's not going to knuckle under to President Trump. And as I'll say toward the end here of this discussion, the president probably has hurt himself in much more than one respect with this move, which, of course, he claims he doesn't know anything about it. This was all Judge Jeanine, who is his U.S. attorney for the Washington, D.C. district. She's the one that brought this case. She didn't know anything about it and expressed surprise and so forth. And, of course, if you like that, if you believe that, I've got the oceanfront property in Kansas I'll sell you. And Yardeni also reminded everybody that as early as now Wednesday this week, when the Supreme Court of the United States has told us they've got their next decision day coming out, we could still get this week that tariffs decision. We'll see if that happens or not. That is likely to go against the president and roil the markets a little bit. But here again, we have a situation where the markets are still giving President Trump the benefit of the doubt. Everybody's been making money hand over fist as long as you got money to start with. And so people have continued to be very forgiving. And I want to put things in context a little bit. You know, as with everything that the president says or does, you usually have those people with their different versions of TDS, either Trump derangement syndrome or Trump deification syndrome, take their opposite sides. Those with the former will look at this crazy action by the president concerning the Fed and how that could upset a lot of things in the market and the economy and our standing in the world and the standing of U.S. debt if there's a question that arises and strengthens over just how sound America's monetary policy is going to be. And I know that's laughable in a way, but for present purposes, that's what a lot of people say. And, you know, and when you add this this investigation, a criminal investigation against the Fed, to the president coming out over the weekend and calling himself the acting president of Venezuela, and all of the other stuff that's gone on lately, you see, gee, you know, Nero has been reincarnated. And it's comical, and it's a little bit eyebrow raising. If you go, all you got to do is go to, if you don't remember the history of the Roman Emperor Nero, all you got to do is go to Wikipedia and just look at the cursory biography of him. You say, damn, I know this guy. So there's a lot of the same character and policy and other things between the two of them. Yet, on the other hand, you look at some of the people who have, knee-jerk run to rally behind the president again, as they do on everything. And it's interesting that I've more than once seen the reference to President Andrew Jackson, and that this is a great thing Trump is doing. You know, whether you're a Fed chairman or whoever, if you lie to Congress, you need to be accountable, etc. And now in this case, it involves the Federal Reserve, which is thwarting President Trump's agenda, etc., etc. That's a stretch to compare President Trump to Andrew Jackson for a lot of reasons I'll get to here in just a few minutes. But, you know, one of the things I think we need to remember is that, and again, this is unprecedented as far as a criminal investigation. It's unprecedented as far as the Fed chairman actually taking to the public on social media as he did last night. But it's not that new that we have from time to time U.S. presidents who carp about the Federal Reserve in various ways and are very public about it. One of the more infamous times, and some of you have heard or read this story, was that there was a point during the latter part of his term as president when things weren't going real well, the Vietnam War, inflation, and everything else, and literally Lyndon Johnson took William McChesney Martin, who was the Fed chairman at the time, and reportedly grabbed him by the lapels and put him against the wall and said, here's what I want you to do. I don't know if he ever did that or not. And of course, Lyndon Johnson in those days too was very well known, way beyond President Trump, who never had a bit of this experience. Johnson was great, as all the reports in history have said, at deal making and so forth on Capitol Hill. He was a great, he had very sharp elbows, and he had a lot of experience from having been a congressional leader. But regrettably, where President Trump is concerned, it stops at hothead. And he doesn't have that experience. And certainly, and regrettably, I have to say, with him, it is not always as much about policy as it is, whatever the issue, that you're loyal to him. And that's the bottom line. I had somebody yesterday ask me, when we were talking about this news, why is it that the president has gone after Jerome Powell the way he has done it? After all, he's the guy that first appointed Powell as Fed chairman back in, 2018 now, or 2017, whatever it was. And I said, look, the problem with President Trump, one of his character issues, in my opinion, this is my opinion, of course, you're entitled to agree or disagree, is that everything with him, for the most part, seems to be personal or transactional. It's less about principles and policies, and I agree with a lot of the president's policies, don't get me wrong, but you need to be a suck-up, to put it bluntly. You know, and it's why someone like Lindsey Graham, who was calling for Trump's scalp, he repeatedly said years back that Trump was unfit to be president. He thought Trump should have been locked up with everybody else after the so-called insurrection in January of 2020. And now they're golfing buddies and best friends. When you look at Lindsey Graham's voting record, and as often as not, he as sure as heck has not supported the so-called MAGA agenda. But those who have supported that agenda, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Tom Massies, the Rand Pauls, and some of the other ones there bit by bit, as some of the president's unquestioning support has been wavering in a recent past, those are the ones that Trump is on the outs with. And it doesn't reflect well on him and what he really does believe about his policy. And of course, that's also evidenced, in my opinion, too, by so many ways in which he has gone back on a lot of what his agenda is. And it also, you know, it kind of goes to the almost crackpot comments he makes from time to time if you simply disagree with him. I mean, you look at last week, and I already talked about Venezuela in the podcast prior to this. I've sent out some stuff, a great piece by George Friedman of Geopolitical Futures. You need to watch that if you've not done it already, because I think it does put what Trump has done in Venezuela, what he's talked about in Cuba, what he's talking about in Greenland, in a fairer and less partisan light that may surprise you, because again, I'm at least in principle on board with this whole Donroe Doctrine thing even myself. But go back to last week at the White House when the president had all these different oil executives there, and it shows how, again, this is all with him personal. And it's photo ops, and it's everybody. You can't answer a question without going into a 5-minute glowing love fest over how President Trump is the greatest leader in the history of the solar system, etc. But it came out that the CEO of Exxon made a comment that Venezuela, as he sees it as a CEO, is essentially uninvestable. The country is badly broken. It's not going to be nearly as easy as the president and some other people have tried to make it seem to go in there and get that energy industry back on its feet, which eventually probably will be done. And of course, after that the truth bomb came out and embarrassed the president, he says, well, you know, then maybe Exxon won't be allowed to be part of the team that goes in there to reverse the downfall of Venezuela's energy industry. And of course, the other comical part of that at the press conference was when he was asking the Halliburton executive who was there about his opinion and how he got forced out of Venezuela. And come to find out, it was President Trump and his sanctions that made the situation in Venezuela go from bad to worse and forced Halliburton out of the country when they weren't wanting to leave. But it was those sanctions back then that did it. So, again, this shows more about the president's lack of care and interest in policy details, and it all is about him and his bluster, and you either agree with him or you're on the outs. And again, you know, that brings us back down to Chairman Jerome Powell at the Fed. If you followed this whole saga between Trump and Powell for as long as it's been going on, which has been quite a while, you obviously know that beyond all of this name calling and too late Powell and all the rest of this stuff, that basically you've got a situation where, as Powell himself said last night, and anybody again who's followed this knows this, this is not about what he said or didn't say to Congress. It's not about the cost overruns at the Eccles Building, which even when President Trump was there with him, when the two of them were wearing a hard hats and he was asked a question about that, he said, well, I don't want to be Monday morning quarterback. Sometimes you got cost overruns and stuff like that. And I also can't help from throwing in here that if the president and his team are really concerned about cost overruns and stuff, and look, kudos to them for helping to get to the bottom with that ex-celebrity, Nick Shirley, I think is his name without looking it up, with his help getting to the bottom of a lot of this fraud in Minnesota and in other liberal Democrat states. They're trying to root that out. It's great. If you want to root out corruption and waste and cost overruns, you have to start with the Pentagon, which has never passed an audit, which blows more money than all of these other things we're wringing our hands over, put together many, 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 many times over. And an entity which the president wants to increase his budget by 50% next year. He says he wants a dream military, $1 trillion budget, which is more than the next 18 or 20 countries on the planet combined, put together, isn't enough. Now he wants $1.5 trillion budget. And he, you know, obviously he's not concerned about cost overruns and all of the waste there. So this is silly. And I don't say all this stuff, folks, because I'm a fan of the Federal Reserve. If you follow me for any length of time, you know that the only good Fed is a dead Fed. It needs to be abolished. We need to have a system of money in this country, not run at interest in this fractional reserve way, which you're going to be hearing more about again in the days immediately ahead of us. And Jerome Powell, look, he has been a screw-up in many ways. The reason we had runaway inflation again a few years back for a spell for the first time since the late 70s and early 80s was because this guy with COVID as a cover had to bail out the markets and super liquefy markets again by printing something like 30% of the U.S. dollars ever brought into being within the space of about 2.5 years. He added trillions to the monetary base. That's why we had the inflation we did. Joe Biden didn't start it. He made it worse. But this all starts at the Fed. And so there's no question that Powell has been a screw-up. He let that get way out of hand. He was late raising interest rates when he finally did do it. And I don't buy the bit that he's, you know, too late Powell. You know, Peter Navarro, one of President Trump's other allies, came to his defense this morning and was chastising Powell for being too late Powell. He's the worst Fed chair since Arthur Burns. Well, that's true in some respects, but maybe not in others. So look, I think that there's plenty of criticism for the Fed. I would change the system because a lot of this is legit. All right. But here's where the president's got himself a major problem now of his own making. There are a handful of things, and only a handful of things in these partisan times, that the uniparty will, in concert, go to the mat over. One is the military-industrial complex, tragically. One continues to be, although the Republicans that believe in the MAGA agenda have pushed back on this, as have a few Democrats, but another one continues to be keeping the American empire intact around the world. That's a work in progress, and it's a subject that, you know, we've talked about elsewhere, and we will otherwise elsewhere. We're not going to talk about it today. But right at the top of that list is that the Federal Reserve as an institution is sacrosanct. Nobody wants to fiddle with that, by and large, certainly not on Capitol Hill. Now, I've said since before he was inaugurated again a year ago, that President Trump was facing a terrible dilemma getting back into his second term because the math was very much against him. The math has gotten worse since then. This year alone, out of the going on, now we're going on $39 trillion of a federal debt. This year alone, a little over $8 trillion of that number comes due, and it needs to be rolled over, besides the approximately $2 trillion, give or take, that we're going to add to the debt this year. Most of that paper was issued at rates lower than the entire yield curve right now. And Trump and certainly Treasury Secretary Bessent know fully well that one of the problems that they have is that even if they stick with Bessent's strategy of depending on pretty much payday loans, trying to finance all of this or refinance all of this, the shortest terms possible, the problem comes back up again in 6 months or a year or 2 years, whatever. So what do you do? What you do is you try and bring down short-term interest rates. And for the debt, that, of course, is something that is very much needed. I'm going to read a quote to you in just a minute. But as far as the markets are concerned, the bond market vigilantes don't like that idea. It's why the long-term interest rates have stayed fairly elevated, even as we're told, not truthfully, that inflation has continued to come down, even as we're told, not truthfully, that we're going to have trillions of dollars come in investments and tariff revenue and stuff like that. Wild exaggerations, to be sure. So that's the reason why the president wants lower interest rates. The problem is that the more you cause angst over spending and debt and so forth, the market, at least on long-term debt, wants to go the other way. And again, Trump has done a lot of this to himself. He has refused to stay behind the people on Capitol Hill that legitimately believe in the MAGA effort and want to reduce spending. He pulled the rug out from under Elon Musk early on, and so that whole effort pretty much has resulted in little being done to remove fraud and cost overruns and stuff like that everywhere. A little bit has been done here and there. I'm not completely dismissing it, but we didn't get nearly what we should have out of that because, unfortunately, and again, this goes back to Trump's personality flaws, he tolerates people like Speaker Johnson in the House, like Leader Thune in the Senate, neither of whom will support him if in a crisis. They'll go right back to the uniparty thing and say, oh, gee, Trump led us down a garden path. He made a terrible mistake. Both of these bastards are liars. They're continuing to shovel billions with the spending bills they're working on right now into the same refugee rat holes that we're finding out have been abused. So, again, the president brought this on himself. The other part of this he's brought on himself, regrettably, is that this much more overt assault against the Fed, if anything, is number one, going to result in the Fed being even less willing to lower interest rates. They've already made clear when they lowered interest rates in December. And don't forget, Jerome Powell led a very fraught and conflicted board, not by much of a margin, into lowering interest rates a third time back in December. He did that. If it wasn't for him, and if he was against it himself, they may not even have done that. But after they did that, they made clear, and Powell made clear, that okay, we've done enough for now. We're going to sit on our hands for a while, see how a lot of things shake out. And again, from an economic point of view, it's really hard to come up with the rationale for the need for interest rate cuts, at least on the surface, and at least if you buy, the numbers that the government puts out. Now, again, it's not like it used to be when you look at some of these statistics, because we've got kind of a tale of two cities economy. The top 35-40% of income earners that have got good stock portfolios, they think everything is wonderful. Everybody else is living paycheck to paycheck. There's not a whole hell of a lot of in-between left anymore. But when you look at the GDP numbers, you look at all these different kind of things, and if Trump believes his own rhetoric and wants us to believe it, There is no need. It's, you know, it's like Ed Yardeni said this morning, who I referred to a minute ago, there is no need to lower interest rates further. So he's hurt his cause on that, because the Fed right now doesn't want to seem to be knuckling under to this pressure, this increased pressure now, with these threats of criminal investigations. That's number one. Number two, you now have a situation, and as I said over the weekend on a couple of my posts to you, there already was a very minority case, but not insignificant, making the argument that Jerome Powell, if certain circumstances come about, may continue as Fed chairman beyond May, when his term as chairman comes up. And if you've lost track, his term as chairman expires in May, but his term on the Fed itself as a member of the Board of Governors still runs through 2028. Now, follow me here on this, because this is really wild, and you want to really see the fireworks between Trump and the Powell-led Fed. Wait until this happens, if it does. Now, first off, Senator Tom Tillis from North Carolina, who is not one of Trump's favorite Republicans, to be sure, and the feeling is mutual. If you listen to Senator Tillis, he has decided to retire this year rather than be primaried. That news has been out for a little while now. But he's on the Senate Banking Committee, or they call it these days Finance Committee, whatever the hell it is. Used to be Senate Banking Committee. That's how old I am. But anyway, he has said he is not going to allow any new moves by President Trump until this thing is settled. He and, of course, Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts, she doesn't like this either. But they're not the only ones that have come out. In fact, fairly uniformly, members of Congress who have chimed in on this, economists that have chimed in on it, and this is what I referred to earlier when I made my comment about Yardeni, maybe would have had a little bit different take if he had waited for the end of the day. You had a big release this afternoon from a number of past Fed chairmen and chairwomen, because you got to include Janet Yellen in that, Treasury secretaries, other economists, who unanimously talk about how dangerous this is, this so-called assault on the Fed's independence. And you know, within the context of the system we have, of course, they're right. Again, we shouldn't have the Fed. That's a different discussion. But given the context in which we live, they're right that this is an assault on the Fed's independence. And everybody is going to rally around this. You know, Tillis is going to rally around it. Elizabeth Warren is going to rally around it. So what does that mean for the makeup of the Fed board going forward? Well, you've got a situation where the governor that's on there just recently to spend that several months on there to fill somebody else's term who would step down, Stephen Miron. He's the one that's been advocating as Trump's mouthpiece on the Fed, bigger rate cuts than everybody else wanted and deeper rate cuts and so forth. In case you'd forgotten, his time is about up already at the Fed. So that seat needs to be filled. Next, the president at some point here, sooner rather than later, is going to announce his choice for chairman to replace Jerome Powell. So you got to start asking about what ifs, all right? If Tillis stays true to himself, and I suspect he will because he's a lame duck, he's not running for re-election this year, he is going to, because he wants to oppose Trump, number one, and because on principle I think he does believe what he's saying, there's not going to be a vote favorably or otherwise, maybe not at all, on anybody right now. Maybe not a replace for Myron right away. Maybe not whoever the replacement is for Jerome Powell. In case you didn't know this, and this is the argument that, again, I said until recently was a big outlier, very small minority view that all of a sudden people are going to start talking about more. You watch this. If we get a situation where there's a deadlock in the Senate, or there's an impasse in the Senate, and there's a Mexican standoff between the Senate Finance Committee, which has to confirm this new pick, whoever it ends up being, And the president who says, well, you know, we're not going to do that. I'm going to fire Powell. That's another case that we're waiting on news on from the Supreme Court. I'm going to fire Powell. If the Supreme Court gives him cover to do that, then this whole thing may change somewhat. But I'm not necessarily expecting that. Certainly not in the case of the chairman where the Senate has to weigh in on this. But if we have the standoff, the president's not going to give, the Senate's not going to give, those who exist as members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve have the power to vote themselves to continue Jerome Powell as chairman if they so choose. So if and when that happens, remember who's the cause of this, all right? The president wants to get rid of Powell. He may have just started a set of dominoes falling to keep Powell in there longer than it was going to be the case anywhere. Beyond that, Powell as there's beyond that, of course, the speculation has already been rife over whether when his term ends, if there is a replacement voted on by the Senate and confirmed by May to replace him as chairman, what is Powell going to do? Because again, his term as a member of the Board of Governors still has got another couple of years or so to run. Is he going to stay there or do what has been more customary in the recent past and leave? Now he's got more of a reason just to spite President Trump to stay. So that's one less seat that the president can try and put a yes man or yes woman on the board with. So, you know, this is going to be interesting going forward. And despite the fact that today the markets righted themselves, this is probably going to lead to a lot more volatility. And again, we've got the tariff thing coming up and so forth as well. So, you know, things just got a whole lot more interesting. They did for, of course, the precious metals, which as I alluded to earlier, we got a huge jump there. The dollar weakened a little bit, but it's still kind of in a no man's land. You know, if you followed what I've said about the dollar recently, we were just starting to get a more defined, methodical rounding bottom for the U.S. dollar, and then a rally because of everything else going on in the world. Now we've kind of paused that, so we don't. There's no really technical signal to rely on right now for the dollar to go up or down. But of course, the president's made it very clear he wants the dollar to go down, to weaken, to help stoke asset prices and exports and all the rest of this stuff. That's certainly something he's worn on his sleeve. There's no surprise about that. But here again, running his mouth and picking these fights, he may screw up in reverse, because if he really gets nuts over this whole thing and causes a big sell-off in the market, you're going to see a spike in the dollar when everybody has to run for the hills and get liquid in dollars and sell everything that they've been buying for many, many months now. So that could be something that pulls a rug out from under his own stated objectives, and it's something that he will himself have caused if it comes to that. Before I wrap up with a few other kind of out-of-the-box thoughts as to why we're at this point and how we got here, I need to push back just for a minute on the whole Andrew Jackson kind of thing. Some of you who have followed me for long enough, and that's not really that long ago, know that right after the president was reelected, with the four-year gap in between, of course, last fall, or a year ago this last fall, we're in 2026 now, that I made a couple of comments about what he needs to do as far as monetary policy. And I actually used, among other photos and pictures and graphics, a photo of Trump in the Oval Office with President Andrew Jackson's portrait behind him. And I said, listen, if the president really understands Old Hickory's history when it comes to the banks, he's got an opportunity to follow in those footsteps. Of course, the idea that he can fully extinguish the existing federal debt, like at one brief point in history, Andrew Jackson accomplished during his time in the White House, that's not going to happen. But at the least, he can try and get us on the path toward that in a major way. So that's the first way in which President Trump is not Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson hated banking. He hated debt. He did not want a banking cartel running the U.S. economy. And if you understand the history of it, the reason why we had a first bank of the United States, while George Washington was still president, in case you've forgotten, Alexander Hamilton, of course, being one of the big proponents of that, we need to have a central bank, but at that time run and owned by the government, although money ended up getting influenced, as it always does, was to have the colonies that are now a country be able to have banking to help them get on their feet and grow and so forth. And then that was the same rationale to have the charter for the Second Bank of the United States. And importantly, both of those charters had finite terms. And when it came to renewing the charter and turning the Second Bank of the U.S. into the Third Bank of the U.S., Andrew Jackson said, no, we paid off the national debt. I'm not going to allow this. You know, I'm going to rout you out. You've all heard that famous quote, you're a den of vipers, and I'm going to, by the eternal, I will rout you out. He hated these banking power interests that were even as early as those years, trying to take a get a stranglehold on the young United States of America. That is not what we have today. We have a privately created bank that's been around for over a century, and President Trump, in no way, shape, or form, wants to do anything about it. You know, I agree with Justin Amash, the former congressman, I think from Michigan it was, who said earlier today that my problem with the Federal Reserve is that it exists. Trump's problem with the Federal Reserve is that it doesn't exist solely to serve him. Trump is a self-proclaimed king of debt. He thinks he is going to exert his will on the Federal Reserve without doing anything to change it institutionally. Sure as hell not doing anything to change the institution of fractional reserve banking, which is how we got into this mess of all of this debt to begin with, whatever the interest rate level is on that debt. Trump doesn't have a vision to do anything about that. He just wants what he wants right now, you know, and period. And you know, it's going to come back and bite him. Again, there is behind the scenes some method for this madness, no question about it. But by and large, he does not have any qualms about the Fed as a banking institution. And that's what really needs to be addressed. The reason he's not addressing it and doing what he's doing right now is at least that one little part of him, with Scott Bessent on his shoulder and Kevin Hassett and some others, you know, is going to stop him short of getting rid of the Fed as an institution. They all believe in the Fed as an institution, regrettably. But we're at this crisis point, the end of financial repression, as I've talked about it from time to time over the last year or so. We're at this point where the math doesn't work anymore. And on that note, I want to read something to you from a very smart guy. He goes by the name Endgame Macro on X. Very prescient stuff. Even when he has fairly long posts, this one is not that long. There's not a syllable wasted. It's all good, meaty stuff. It makes sense. And it goes to this idea of why Trump and his team are so desperate to force an institution that they refuse to change into doing something which, as an institution, right now, it really can't change if it wants to save face for itself. Kind of an interesting situation to be in. But here's where we're at. And there's no question that we're going to have some added fireworks sooner rather than later over this. But here's where we're at. And I'm going to quote this guy because, again, this is really good stuff. Quote, even when you remove Powell from the picture entirely, the Fed's influence was already on a glide path lower. In an era of fiscal dominance, the Fed's influence shrinks almost automatically. Once debt gets large enough and deficits stop being cyclical and become permanent, monetary policy can't operate freely anymore. Rates stop being a clean policy lever and start getting boxed in by the need to keep government financing manageable and the financial system from breaking. Push rates too high and you risk detonating debt service costs, stressing banks, breaking markets, or forcing Congress and Treasury to step in. At that point, fiscal reality quietly sets the boundaries, no matter how independent the Fed sounds on paper. Continuing this quote, "That trajectory didn't depend on Powell, and it won't change when he's gone. Aging demographics, entitlement math, defense spending, and chronic deficits all point in the same direction. Policy has to accommodate financing needs. You can already see it playing out. Cuts will come onto the table sooner. Price pressures are allowed to run longer. Balance sheet tools do more of the heavy lifting than rate moves. And working hand in hand with Treasury stops being optional. The Fed doesn't suddenly lose its authority, it loses flexibility. And once markets understand that, monetary policy becomes less about credibility and more about managing constraints. That's fiscal dominance in real time." Close that quote. So it's fiscal dominance in the end in the character of President Trump that is finding this way to try and force the Fed into getting completely on board with the math. The Fed as an institution does not want to do that to save its own face. So how this shakes out remains to be seen. And of course, as I feel the need to, I'm going to be advising our members to make changes in our portfolio mix to reflect what's going on. I resisted the urge to get a little bit more, take a little baby step further in the bearish direction when the markets open today. And I'm glad I did, because what looked like at least somewhat of a halfway meaningful drop in the markets before they opened in response to all of this stuff ended up being a nothing as far as the bears are concerned, and the bulls still have got the upper hand. How long it continues remains to be seen. I think that there's a lot of stresses that are all kind of coalescing here. Don't forget, as I pointed out for quite a while now, going back to the middle of last fall, the Fed has had to inject money time and again into the overnight repo markets and otherwise add to liquidity through their open market operations. It's a situation much like we saw in the fall of 2019 that's unfolding, as I've reminded you of a number of times in the recent past. So there is a need on the part of the Fed to do that. They're doing it already by providing more liquidity as the markets need it, but they're trying to hold their ground on interest rates. The unfortunate thing for everybody involved is that nobody gets the idea that we really need to change the system. We cannot have an economy dependent at this point in time on the fractional reserve system presided over by the Federal Reserve, because it's just not going to work out. We need far more money in the real economy. So there is some truth to that. The only thing that the powers that be are worried about is how much money the financial sector needs to keep things from imploding. So where this shakes out, we don't know. But again, I'll close here with a comment from one of the better known financial pundits on Wall Street, Nick Timiraos, who writes for the Wall Street Journal regularly. He is usually considered one of the most dialed in Fed watchers. And he, one of his comments today was, quote, "A criminal investigation of a sitting chair is without precedent. And Powell's message was too. It was wrapped in a directness that he had spent years avoiding. Powell often chooses his words carefully, and Sunday's unusually stern delivery lacked the diplomatic off-ramp and studied neutrality of his past comments about the White House. Trump's pick could also face more scrutiny from the Senate as a result of the this latest escalation. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican from North Carolina, said Sunday he would block any nominee until the investigation is resolved, a warning that the administration's pressure campaign could create new problems even as it attempts to solve old ones. So, you know, the things that Trump should be doing is pushing for a national currency, saying that we need United States notes to have the kind of volume of money in the economy that we need, and we'll have to just live with the legacy debt on the Fed's part. He should be looking at the National Infrastructure Bank Initiative, which I've talked about repeatedly. There's all kinds of things he should be doing. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, it's a waste of time and energy and attention to be picking this fight and now really doubling down in this very severe way, this fight with the Fed, and mostly with Chairman Powell, because it's put him in a situation that I don't really see him winning this. About the only way that happens is, of course, Powell's not going to step down. If anything, this emboldens him, as well as just about everybody else on the Fed, with the exception of Stephen Miron, who's leaving not many days since. So that's the one experiment Trump may get with, you know, an out-and-out Trump sycophant and pawn at the Fed. I don't think anybody's going to put up with that going forward, and the Senate sure isn't going to put up with it when the president names his desired replacement for Powell. So the fireworks are only starting, folks. We're going to revisit this from time to time as we need to, or as things evolve, or new parts of this story come out. But again, this is all part of, besides, you know, what we can say about Trump being more Nero and less Andy Jackson, this still is something that he unfortunately is in the wrong place at the wrong time himself, because this is the point at which the math is just so stressed, just doesn't want to work anymore, that we've got a crisis that's going to unfold. And will it be resolved by Trump and by the Treasury Department forcing down interest rates across the board in the market? You know, the president just tried to do that, talk down mortgage rates. He's had some early success, by the way. I don't know who these phantom people are that are buying $200 billion worth of mortgage securities to try and push those rates down. Maybe he'll try and do the same in the end with Treasury paper. That's a little bit more more of a mountain for him to climb. But anyway, no more rambling. That's enough for now. A lot of stuff at play here, and you're going to have to know when to zig and when to zag. Stay tuned.
We're glad you joined us today. As always, write to chris@nationalinvestor.com with your comments and questions. And be sure to visit yourmoneytoday.org if you haven't already. Sign up for our free alerts, notifications of new shows, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.